Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Oxford Charger Podcast. As always, I'm your guy, Blake Thompson, and I'm so glad that you can join with us to listen in on conversation with coaches, athletes, teachers, and fans, people who love being a Charger here in Oxford, Mississippi. Each episode, we hope that you'll enjoy the insights into the Charger athletic program and learn a little bit more about the person as well. I'd ask that you please subscribe to the Oxford Charger Podcast in your favorite podcast app, and be sure to find us on social media at Charger Podcast. In today's episode, we get to talk with Bradley Robertson, the recently named superintendent of the Oxford School District. Mr. Robertson has been with the Oxford Schools for many years as a teacher, a coach, athletic director, and also a principal. During our conversation, Mr. Robertson talks of learning to love school himself after not liking it at all as a youngster, and why it was that he sought after the job of superintendent here after experiencing it in many other roles. And he talks about both the challenges he sees of the school district and also the goals he has for all the Charger students here. As always, let me know if you have any suggestions for future guests here on the pod. And if you're feeling a little squirrely, leave us a rating, interview, and Apple Podcast. All right, here we go. Well, thanks, Mr. Robertson, for some time here. I know it's summertime, and a lot of people think that teachers and administrators get the summer off, but I know that's not the case at all here, even though we're in the middle of June.
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, this is our busiest time of the school year at the central office staff, just because we're planning, getting prepared for the upcoming school year. And that takes a lot of work. There's a lot of preparation that takes place during the months of June and July.
Well, first of all, hear from me. Congratulations on your new appointment, I guess, and selection as the superintendent. You are somebody who is no stranger to the Oxford School District whatsoever. You've been a part as a teacher and a coach, and then came back as a principal, assistant or associate superintendent, and now you're named superintendent. But have you officially taken over yet, or is it still the end of this month as we're moving it towards the end of June? Or what's the timeline been like for you since that was announced?
The official start date's July 1. That's when my contract starts. But I've been fortunate, since I'm already here in the Oxford School District, to start working basically the day that after I was named the superintendent. Mr. Right. Harvey's been very gracious in allowing me to make decisions building up to the next school year, which, mm-hmm. Like I said, I've been very grateful for, because it really gives you a jump start. You really feel like you don't lose a year of time. You know, I empathize for superintendents that are just now being selected and moving into districts, mm-hmm. that are new, that they haven't been in before, because you almost have to take a complete year to plan and to prepare. And I've been fortunate to be able to do that. Right. Since March.
Well, I know in talking with Mr. Hamilton, when he came on, he obviously came from a different district and a different part of the state even. And he came in, he knew about Oxford, obviously. But you come in having, like you said, the track record of multiple experiences here. What was it about this job in Oxford that appealed to you and made you want to continue to rise up into the position you're in now and be the leader?
We came to Oxford in 1998, my wife and I both, to attend Ole Miss in secondary education. Immediately, we fell in love with Oxford. Mm-hmm. It's a special place. It's a special community. Both of us did our student teaching at Oxford in the Oxford School District in 1999 and 2000. Again, then we fell in love with the Oxford School District itself. Mm-hmm. And that's why we stayed here. This is home for us. We've always wanted to be a Charger since 1998 when we came to Oxford. And that's always been an appeal for us to stay in this community as much as we possibly could.
So what was it that drew you to teaching coaching in the first place? You grew up in Ripley, played baseball. Was there other sports as well?
Baseball was primary sport to play.
Played baseball and then came to Ole Miss. Eventually, what was it that made you decide, I want to be a teacher or coach?
Interestingly enough, I absolutely hated school.
Okay.
In elementary school. Like, I would cry every day going to school. Funny story, my mother tells stories about how she would literally have to chase me around the house to get me on the school bus. But that really all started to change by the time I got to middle school, and in particularly high school. Had some great high school teachers, but the one that influenced me the most was my baseball coach.
Okay.
Oddly enough, his name was Vince Jordan. He presented education in a way through both teaching and on the athletic field, on the baseball field, mm-hmm. that intrigued me, that brought out the best in me. Honestly, leadership abilities and skills that I never knew that I had until I met Coach Jordan. He's the one that really changed my perspective of school when I saw the impact that he had on me as an individual student athlete. It led me to believe that I could have that same impact on others, on other students as well.
And it's just happenstance that your wife is also a teacher, or did y'all kind of meet in the school of education, or how did that work?
Yeah, funny story. So we actually met at a New Year, a BSU, a Baptist Student Union, New Year's Eve party when we were at Northeast Community College. And that was the first semester we had been there. So January of the first semester, we'd been there a semester. And we've been together ever since. We dated all through Northeast. She cheered at Northeast.
Okay.
And also she got a scholarship to cheer at Ole Miss, which is honestly why I'm at Ole Miss. You know, I'd already made up my mind that she was the one that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with.
Wherever she was going.
Wherever she was going, I was going as well. So we both came to Ole Miss. She actually started off in physical therapy. And I think through seeing me in the field of education and talking about education, that, you know what, she kind of migrated towards that field as well in science education.
Yeah, she's still in biology primarily, right?
Right. She teaches, her certification is in life sciences and also in chemistry.
Okay.
But she loves the life sciences. But she's transitioning actually as well this year. She's coming out of the classroom to be the Oxford School District science instructional coach for all science teachers in the district. So
I didn't realize you were a Tiger as well. I was at Northeast for a couple of years.
So. Let me tell you, the best 2 years of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear a lot of people say, don't go to community college, right, so on and so forth. Listen, I'm an advocate for community college.
My only regret about going to Northeast was that I made some really close friendships and bonds those 2 years. And then we kind of all scattered across, you know, Mississippi or even the Southeast after that.
But yeah,
I love my time in Boonville. And there's not a lot to Boonville, especially back in the mid-90s.
So. No, there was not. There was the Dodge store.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many nights that Nicole and I sat in a booth at the Dodge store, because obviously you couldn't go to each other's dorm rooms or anything like that. So yeah, I spent lots of nights in the Dodge store having conversation with the friends.
And Bumpers right next to it had good milkshakes.
That's right. They did.
So you came here and you knew you wanted to be that. What was that about being a coach and being a teacher as well? Because those are similar, obviously, but what was it that you learned in the classroom those first few years that you now can translate into as a superintendent?
People matter, first and foremost. I think in the field of education, we get so caught up in the next initiative, the next program, the next best thing, that we forget that our number one resource are people.
Mm-hmm.
And building strong bonds and relationships with those people should be our primary focus. That should be the primary focus for myself with members of our community. It should be the primary focus of teachers in the classroom, with coaches and their athletes. It is the most important thing that we do. Relationships are the crux or the centerpiece of education. And a lot of times we get in such a hurry that we miss that, right? We miss the value in it. And then quite honestly, we miss the fun of it.
Yeah.
When you ask me about coaching, that's what I remember. I remember getting to celebrate with my kids.
Right.
And I remember getting to hug them and pat them on the back and try to console them when they were hurting. It's those things that I remember. It's not about a win or a loss or an X or an O. It's those moments that are so valuable to me that I look back on for my career. And that's in the classroom and also on the athletic field.
Do you miss the classroom itself any of these days? I know you've been in administration now for a number of years.
Absolutely. For two reasons. I have a passion for mathematics. It's just what I've taught. But I also have a passion for kids. And the further you move up the administrative hierarchy, the more disconnected you find yourself with kids in general.
Yeah.
Because I'm not interacting with them every day like I was in the classroom. And I certainly miss that aspect. But on the positive side, now, under the leadership hierarchy, I have the ability to make long-term sustainable changes that I think will benefit our kids in the Oxford community that I wouldn't necessarily have had as a coach or a classroom teacher.
As an aside, is it unique for Oxford to have, you mentioned you were in mathematics, for there to be so many math teachers who are also good coaches here? Because you got Coach Ballman and Coach Beard, who are now in the athletic department as our co-directors, but they're both math teachers. You have Cutcliffe, who is obviously
math teacher.
Yeah, and all I'm assuming you were smart too, but I know that they're all super smart. And usually the kind of, you know, sometimes the, it's not just your driver's ed teacher. It's not just your, is it, do you feel that's a bit unique for Oxford or?
Let me tell you, I don't know that you could look across the country and find as many high quality coaches that also are high quality math teachers. Mm-hmm. And you only named three. I mean, there's others. There's Logan, there's Logan Dotson, there's others.
Right.
Our math department is full.
I was just looking at head coaches.
Yeah.
You start talking about positional and
sure.
assistant coaches, right.
It's a very, very unique situation.
Well, speaking of coaches in general, I know right now because of Beard and Baldwin moving into the roles they're in now, there are a number of coaching searches happening. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I remember talking to Mr. Martin about this, but sometimes there's a misconception about, well, the school is going to find the best wide receiver coach or the best softball coach, the best whatever. You were an athletic director yourself for a while. Shed some light on what it is like, because the district's first priority is to hire a good teacher who
That's
can
right.
also coach.
Absolutely.
But obviously you want them to be a good coach as well. So how did you and how do you now direct your athletic directors to do the coaching searches to have the win-win for teacher and coach, classroom and field?
Sure. And again, that expectation in the Oxford School District is you can't coach if you can't teach.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be a quality teacher first. And we pride ourselves in that. Just as you just said, with all of the teachers that we just named
right.
that are exceptional teachers as well as coaches. And then again, we don't only rely on applicants that apply in the applicant pool, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's our job to go out and get the best. You know, if that takes us searching out people to get the best, that's what we're going to do. Because our kids in our community deserve the best. And that could come from an applicant pool. It could come from a prior contact that we've had, you know, from my coaching days of coaches that I coached against
right.
or Coach Ballman coached against. Or people that have left the Oxford School District that have become coaches themselves, right? We have a lot of those that are out there. So we do our homework and we sit down and we want the best. We look at the best across the state of Mississippi and that's where we start our search.
Now, I know as you've been coming into the July 1st target date, you may still have one or two more, but your town hall meetings to learn kind of what the people of the district themselves, what they celebrate and what they would like to see be implemented or maybe shifted, changed a bit. What have been a couple of high points that you've learned so far from your meetings you've had?
First and foremost, that we have an exceptional district.
Okay.
We have a lot of support in the Oxford School District. We have incredible resources in the Oxford School District. Those are some of the high points that people spoke about in those community conversations. But one of the things that we have to do a better job of as in areas of improvement is with our standards-based learning. That was a point that several parents brought up. And it's not that they don't agree with the standards-based learning practices. It's that we have not done a good enough job communicating standards-based learning and how it works and the impact of standards-based learning on the students in our Oxford community. So here in the coming weeks, you're going to see OSD standards-based learning reimagined.
Okay.
It'll be out before the school year starts to where we have listened to feedback from our parents and from our teachers and from our community members. And we have made some tweaks to our system so that we can better communicate standards-based learning to our community and to our families.
And if somebody doesn't know what standard-based learning is, what is that in a nutshell?
Wow, yeah, that may be hard to explain
in a nutshell.
Basically, it separates the idea of learning content or standards and behavior,
okay.
right? So when you think when we were in school, if you didn't do your homework, you got a zero on the homework, right?
Right.
Well, that's really a behavior. That's a behavior. You didn't do it, so you get a zero. It doesn't tell me whether or not
I know
you can
not.
Do the work, yeah. right? Uh-huh. We used to have all of those things jumbled together. So that 65 average... We really didn't know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Could the student do the work or was it a behavior problem, right? So now with standards-based learning, we separate the two.
Okay.
So now we have performance measures for standards or the content you're supposed to be learning, and we have performance measures for the behaviors that are happening in class, which, again, gives us a better working knowledge if we're truly preparing kids for their next level on their educational journey.
And I know that this past school year, there's a little bit of a, obviously not a little bit, this past year, there's a big change in the high school with the quarter system, not the quarter system, mm-hmm. but the block system.
Right.
And all. There's a little bit of a tweak happening this year, but have you seen that be successful so far? I know it was a an adjustment for quite a few, but I know many other school districts throughout the state have been successful with that block system. Is that, do you count yourself as a fan of that now?
Yeah, that would have been my second thing that come up in the community conversations from high school parents was about the block system, block schedule. And you're right. There are school districts all across the state of Mississippi and across the country, quite honestly, that are doing that and doing it well. The Clintons, the Madison Centrals, Oak Grove, all of the DeSoto County schools, all of those are on the 4x4 block system. We did need to tweak the block system because of the concern that our parents had basically was around our advanced placement courses.
Right.
Students are having to take AP classes in the fall and not be assessed until the spring.
That's months later.
Yeah. That's right, months later. So a couple of things that we did with that. If a AP class is only going to be offered one time, it's going to be in the spring semester only.
Prior to the testing date.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And then the rest, we're going to put on an AB block system, meaning that those courses would meet for a block of time every other day. But instead of it just being compressed to one semester, it would run all year long. Mm-hmm. So we think both of those practices are going to help alleviate some of those concerns from some of our stakeholders in our community. We don't have the data yet because, you know, it'll be rolling out in August and we'll see how it goes in the spring.
I'll say for my daughter has been a fan of it so far herself. I think it's been able to focus. She's been able to focus on things. And plus then having that fourth block for athletic period too is, you know, and my wife is still sometimes a little bit, we're still figuring it out. But anyway.
Well, and you're right. And that was another concern. I heard from two different groups of parents on that very issue, having athletics in the fourth block, because on one aspect, you see that you could say that it takes a quarter of the academic time, you know, per semester.
Yeah.
But on the other aspect of that, if we were to push athletics after school, you're talking about students getting home much later, taking eight academic classes within a school year. And this is what I've learned. I have attempted a different master schedule or a different schedule every year that I've been an administrator at Oxford High School as a principal.
Yeah.
I've tried an 8-period day. I've tried a modified block where some classes were blocked, some classes were not blocked. I don't know if you remember that. I've obviously been on a 7-period traditional day. There is no perfect schedule.
Sure.
It's just not. So you try to come up with a schedule that's best for all kids involved, and we really hope the 4x4 system is it.
I know that ACT testing or standardized testing is a big deal for students who do choose and are planning to go on to college, whether it's community college or straight into a 4-year school. Oxford has long had, for the last handful of years that I can remember, decade plus, really good ACT scores. I know that this year was 90 plus that scored 30 or above, I think.
That's correct.
And I know that was something that you had really pushed during your times as a principal and throughout there. What is it that Oxford as a district does, as a high school does, to impress upon the students the importance of that and then even help them to achieve those higher scores?
Yeah, great question. When I came back from Senatobia to be the high school principal at Oxford High School, there were a couple of teachers that were just special teachers at Senatobia, gifted in both math and ELA. And when I came back to the Oxford School District and I thought about implementing ACT prep, they were the first two teachers that came to mind. And I brought them with me. Their name Walter and Anna Freeman.
Yeah.
Anna's no longer with us, but Walter is still teaching ACT prep at Oxford High School. They deserve a tremendous amount of credit for the work that they've done with our kids in the ACT. Not just the content knowledge, but the strategy behind taking the ACT. It's been incredible to see, as I said, the gains that they've been able to help our students achieve. But they would be the first ones to tell you, it's not just them.
Right.
It's because we have amazing teachers across the board that do a fantastic job of teaching the content to students. We don't necessarily, some people may be surprised with this, we don't necessarily have a singular emphasis on any assessment. It's not like our teachers are doing ACT prep at the beginning of every class.
No, no. Right.
We teach the standards and we teach it to the level of rigor that we feel like it needs to be taught. And we emphasize the importance of resilience. And our kids work hard because our kids are challenged in the classroom. And then we see the results
right.
In areas like the ACT.
And this was the second year that the district has given it to sophomores as well. In the past, it was always juniors were given it their junior year. But I guess, what was the reasoning for, was that just to familiarize them? And because I know that sometimes there can be, or oftentimes, a level of nervousness or even anxiety about going into the test.
Yeah, what we realized by analyzing some data, that about half of our student population, the first time that they ever saw the ACT was that first junior administration.
Okay.
So we just felt like the experience of taking the assessment prior to taking ACT prep would be beneficial. So they take it now in their sophomore year. Mm-hmm. And then Walter, our ACT prep teacher, gets the data from that administration. And then he is able to tailor the instruction in ACT prep their junior year before they take it in the spring.
That makes sense.
So he gives him the first data point for his work in ACT prep as well, along with giving them exposure to the assessment.
Coming into the job, I know that you've been working with Harvey for a number of years, and y'all had a great working relationship. But I'm sure now that you got the keys to the car, there's some things that you may want to kind of do on your own. What do you see as some of the challenges that you have? And then look ahead a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, what would be happening then for you to say, we've done well and we're growing in the right direction?
Yeah. Well, our challenges are the same challenges that we've honestly had for quite some time. And that's that we have a very large achievement gap.
Right.
We have a population of our students that aren't being as successful as we would like for them to be. If fast forward a couple of years down the road, if you asked me what success would look like, I think it's my vision for the district, meaning that we're transitioning, or my vision for the district is to transition from a school system into a school community. And let me tell you what that looks like. Transitioning to a school community means that we have this collective set of values that we all rally around as a group and as an organization. And to achieve the goals set forth by those values, that we're all willing to give up a part of ourselves to make those around us better.
Okay.
So at the root of it, we're all responsible for each other. I guess I could say it like, instead of using terms like those kids, they're all our kids, mm-hmm. right? You're not only concerned about your child in the Oxford School District, but you're concerned about every child in the Oxford mm-hmm. School District. And once we can take that step, then I think you will see all of our students in our school district be successful. It's not about the resources or lack of resources in our district. It's really about coherence, if you ask me, my opinion. I've been here for a long time, right? It's about coherence. It's about getting us all pulling in the same direction, building a school community.
Coming into this fall, it looks like that things are relaxing a little bit and aren't as crazy as they were this past year with the pandemic, and obviously rewind to the spring break the year prior. But what was it like trying to lead the district with, you may not have but a week or two knowledge of what's coming up because things could change and were changing so quickly? What were some of the keys to leading through that pandemic and trying to keep that cohesion as much as possible? Because, you know, I've seen some school districts that kind of just got scattered about to the point of where it was disarray. And from my perspective, at least, it seems like Oxford, though I doubt you'd say everything was perfect, held it together for the most part.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't perfect.
Right.
Well, again, I think the people that we have in place were key. We have a great curriculum and instruction department. I remember having that conversation sitting in the old central office by the middle school now, with Mr. Harvey and Mr. Cromwell, when we realized that school was about to close that March. And I looked across the table and I said, give me a week. I was the director of curriculum at the time and assistant superintendent. I said, give me a week. So I rallied the troops, the curriculum and instruction department. I said, we got a week. So let's.
And you needed probably a month.
And we need at least. I said, so let's devise a plan. Thomas Harrington, our online learning coordinator, was a critical part of that. All of our instructional coaches, our instructional technologists were critical in making all of that fit together so quickly. But you have to keep in mind, we already had a lot of those things in place. Kids had devices, and if they didn't, we had devices we could give them. We had ways that they could connect to the internet, you know, if needed. We had teachers that had been using learning management systems like Schoology and Seesaw prior to the pandemic. So we had to do some training, but we didn't have to do a ton of training
right.
to have them prepared. Zoom was a different beast. That was one thing that we did have to do some training on. But our teachers are so tech savvy in this district because they're accustomed, because we've been a one-to-one district now for, what, 7 or 8 years, they picked it up well. So we were able to smoothly transition into a virtual learning environment, quite honestly, without missing a lot of instruction. Now, instruction definitely was different because you can't expect to keep a first grader on a Zoom call for an hour, right? You may have 10 minutes to get something across, maybe 15, at a good time. But our curriculum and instruction department prioritized the standards of what was most important. That's what our teachers taught, and they did it well. And quite honestly, have we seen some learning loss? Well, absolutely. But you compare our students to students across the country, which I just did at the last board meeting using our NWA data. Our mean score on the NWA still is far greater than other school districts across the country. So we did well. And it's not nothing I did. It's all about the teachers and the students and the parents in the preparation of the CNI staff.
Do you have an idea what the fall is going to look like moving into the 21-22 school year in terms of relaxing some things or opening things up, or will there still be virtual school?
Yeah, we actually are piloting is not a good word, but we're actually working through that this summer with our summer school. We removed the mask mandate for our summer school. Our language now states that it's recommended but not required, you know, especially if you've been vaccinated.
Right.
And we haven't had any problems at summer school with that. Our plan is to have full in-person instruction in the fall and August. We did receive a survey from the Department of Education today seeking feedback from districts about, you know, their plans of what they expected to implement in the fall. And I will say, if there is virtual learning in some districts, that the guidelines by MDE are much stricter if there's virtual learning taking place moving forward.
Okay.
As far as
attendance and
yes, as far as attendance and instructional time and being required to take state assessments in the spring on campus, there's a lot of different requirements that really wasn't there this past year. But again, my goal is that we have all 4,600 kids on campus in a school in August because I think that's what best serves our kids, our families, and our community.
Right, right. Well, you've been in the school district here for right at 2 decades almost. But if you could go back and write yourself a letter to you as you graduated from Ole Miss and said, hey, here's a key piece of advice for you as a, whether it's a coach or a teacher or just as a man, as a husband, as a dad, but what would you want to tell fresh out of college?
Wow. There's a lot. Yeah. I guess the first thing that I would say is, don't jump at the first job that you're offered as a classroom teacher or coach. Look for jobs that fit you, your disposition, your values, and what you believe about education. New teachers can get so, so excited about a job that they miss the job because they never get to the job because they accept a job first, right? So that would have been my first piece of advice. And the second thing for a new classroom teacher, I cannot overemphasize enough the value of taking the time to build strong, quality relationships with your kids. We get into the classroom, we want to start teaching algebra on day one. And we miss the front loading of building the relationships that pays dividends down the road. And in the long run, we end up wasting more instructional time in the long run because we neglected the relationship component on the front end.
Right. If you ask me about the teachers that I would say are some of my favorite teachers, they were good at teaching, but they also, I knew they cared about me. And that made me want to pay attention and be engaged in their class or not disappoint them by not doing homework or whatnot, more than I loved Spanish or I loved algebra or I loved whatever it was, you know, biology. And so I think that is key.
You know, and I think, as educators, where we get caught up in that, we're teachers probably because we have a passion for the content that we're teaching. And sometimes I think we forget that the kids across the teacher's desk probably don't have that same passion,
right?
Or the majority of them don't. And we're all excited about it, but we don't understand why they're not excited right. about it. But it's innate in us to want to be loved and to be cared about. There's not a human being that walks the face of the earth that doesn't want to be loved and cared about.
Exactly.
So that's why that has to come first.
And I could look back, and I won't call my name, but I could think of a few teachers. I thought, you don't like kids, do you? You're just trying to get to retirement.
That's exactly right.
So hopefully there's none of those here at the district. So, when you became a coach and a teacher, you had your lesson plans. You knew what you were going to be doing. When you had your practice plans and you had your sports schedule, you knew you have preseason, here's play in the playoffs. But now as a superintendent, the schedule probably looks like a big bowl of spaghetti sometimes, because there's so many different things that people ask you questions about, you have responsibilities for. What do you anticipate at least an average week looking like for your schedule, where it's not like I've got, you know, three blocks and an off period and I may coach baseball in the spring?
Well, it's funny you say that. I had a mentor yesterday that I was working with. He's a retired superintendent from Florida. And he said, you may have already realized this, but if not, let me give you the realization. 80% of your time every day will be spent connecting with community members, with parents, with teachers, board members, whoever else it may be, to address their concerns, answer their questions across the district. Mm-hmm. He said 20% of your time will be casting the vision as the leader of the district. Now, when you become a superintendent, obviously you would like for those two roles to be flipped, right?
Yeah, right.
You would like to be 80% to the visionary and looking towards the continuous improvement and how you improve as a district, right? But that's not the reality of it. And Brian had kind of shared that with me as well. So I think you're right. It's like a jumbled up bowl of spaghetti and trying to figure that out. But routinely, the things that will be happening each week that I'm the superintendent mm-hmm. will be, one, will be visiting schools. I will be in every school at least once a week. Not to have meetings, but to just be in the school, to be seen, to see what's going on in classrooms and things like that. Secondly, I will obviously be meeting with my cabinet. I have six chief officers on my cabinet that I will be meeting with weekly as well. And then I will also have biweekly meetings with each principal, and then individual meetings with each board member once a month, just in preparation to keep them up to date of things that are going on, so mm-hmm. on and so forth. It's easy to get caught up in this idea that you're running a race to a finish line, but we're not. We're on a journey. Mm-hmm. We're on a continuous improvement journey. So those communication aspects that I just named are going to be critical in my vision, or guiding my vision as a leader for this school district, and then how we improve as a district, how we improve instruction, how we improve student learning. So those other components of this continuous improvement model as well, continually meeting with our local ministers in our community. That's a great connection point in building community. Mm-hmm. Meeting with business leaders. I'm fortunate enough, I have a meeting with the mayor next Tuesday, right, to have a conversation with her and some of the Board of Aldermen as well. Building that partnership between the school system and our city government, our city officials, is incredibly important to me as well. I say this a lot. Any school system is only as strong as this community. In any community is only as strong as the school system. You can't, when you look out in society, you're not going to see a town that has a really strong school system and a struggling community.
Yeah.
But you're also not going to see a struggling community that has a really strong school system and vice versa. It doesn't exist, right? It's very dependent on one another. So we need to strengthen that partnership so that we can improve student instruction. And again, improve the citizens that we're putting out in the Oxford community.
I know for a whole lot of people, the goal of high school is to see the next level and get to college and get beyond. But the reality is that there's some students that are like, you know, college isn't for me. And they don't care about going to college. They don't want to go to college, but they still want to be successful in life, obviously. What do you see your role as a superintendent, and then also Oxford High and Mr. Hamplin and his staff and crew, in preparing for life in general, even if it isn't? They're going to a four-year school. And what's the best ways that now you're seeing more and more of here at the high school to be able to prepare them for success beyond Oxford High?
You know, a few years ago, we adopted in the Oxford School District a portrait of a graduate. The portrait of a graduate work came out of a committee of community members, business leaders, ministers, students, parents, teachers, district admin, Chamber of Commerce. We all got together and we just simply asked that team of people, what do you want in a graduate of Oxford High School? I can tell you what they didn't say. They didn't say someone that can do calculus or, you know, that can read lit or whatever.
Right.
They said, we want people that'll show up to work. We want people to show up to work on time, mm-hmm. that are not going to fold first time they face a problem, that are ethical, right? That are problem solvers, that are critical thinkers, so on and so forth. So we developed this portrait of a graduate based on what our community feedback was, what they gave us, that said that they wanted in a graduate of Oxford School District. And now we're beginning to operationalize what that looks like. Our curriculum and instruction department right now is working to develop metrics at the middle school and high school of what it looks like for a kid, for a student to be ethical, what it looks like for a student to be personally responsible. And we're going to do that work all the way back to Bramlett. You know, an effective communicator is one of our mm-hmm. portrait of a graduate skills as well. What does that look like for a kindergartner, right? Maybe it's that he or she can say their name, their parents' name, address, and phone number. That's a great skill right. for a kindergartner to have. And if they can communicate it well, right, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then how does that progress up the ladder of their educational journey? So that's the direction we're going. In the Oxford School District, and I will roll this out, I'll give just a tidbit. I don't want to give too much.
I understand.
Of redefining READY.
Okay.
Redefining READY. What does it mean in the Oxford School District to be, for a student to be college READY, career READY, and life READY? That'll be something that comes out in the coming weeks before the school year starts. And it really emphasizes my vision for the Oxford School District. And it'll be some things that we start measuring, again, all the way back to Bramlett, to make sure that when our kids graduate, they meet those three skill sets, college READY, career READY, and life READY. So be looking for that in the coming weeks.
I know we're in the summertime, we're talking about your time management, but what is it you're able to do with your family or even you alone when you want to get away and hang up your superintendent cap and just go be, have fun, be family man?
Yeah, we're big movie watchers at our house. We just got back, you know, from a vacation. We're theme parkers. We love a good theme park.
Are you Universal or a Disney?
Well, no, we've done both okay. multiple times. We've also been to Kentucky Kingdom in Kentucky. We've been to Silver Dollar City.
Yeah.
We are actually considered going to a place called Holiday World in Indiana. There's theme parks all over the country. Obviously, we've been to Six Flags in Atlanta. Yeah. We love theme parks. And we love roller coasters. So that's probably our big thing during the summer is visiting a different theme park. My son has recently decided to pick up golf a little bit.
Okay.
So we are doing a little bit of golfing probably in the morning. We'll go out and play. And board games. We love board games at our house. Board games and cards.
Okay.
It's just a time that we can sit down together, visit together. Now, I will say, we are, three of the four of us are highly competitive. Mom, not as much. She kind of holds down the...
She referees the disagreements.
Yeah, she referees. but the other three of us are very competitive in anything that we do, which adds a whole different element to our board game nights. I wish I could tell you that all of them ended well, but some of them haven't.
Right.
Just because of the competitiveness. But yeah, we love spending time together as a family.
So are y'all Marvel movie watchers?
Yes.
Okay. If you've started much. Loki yet?
Cullen and I, my little boy, started Loki, what's today? Friday? Wednesday.
Okay.
Wednesday afternoon, actually. He and I watched episode one. I think he skipped ahead and also watched episode two.
But. Well, here's a conversation I had with my daughter who has watched all 23 movies a couple of times. But who are your top three most powerful from the MCU at least? Who would you say? I'm putting you on the spot here, but
I mean, that's pretty tough. Mm-hmm. That's pretty tough. I mean, I don't know.
Once I thought of my answer, I was 100% sure of it, but
give me one. Give me one that you think.
I think Wanda's number one, the Scarlet Witch, because she's telekinetic. She can, but if you saw WandaVision,
yeah,
she was able to basically create this entire universe or town through her own mind powers and then controlled everything and then keep everybody else under mind control as well. But then we watched Infinity War and Endgame end of May, I guess, and going back through. And that was when I started trying to think through things. And I thought, I think either she or Strange, but then I'm not a big Captain Marvel fan, but I think she's pretty powerful. But anyway,
well,
I think those three are in the top five probably.
First of all, the WandaVision, I struggled to make it through the black and white episodes at the beginning.
Right.
To even get to the quality episodes. My rest of my family was like, you got to watch it. You got to watch it.
I would have bailed if I hadn't been. I didn't watch it when it first came out.
Okay.
And so people said, if you stick through it, it'll make sense. And so, but I would have probably bailed if I was watching it week to week.
Yeah. And I almost bailed.
Yeah.
But it got better as it went. You know what? That's a question I don't know that you asked, that you answer right off the top of the head.
It takes
I may get back with you on that one.
If you have somebody coming into town that's not familiar with Oxford and they're going to spend the weekend with you, where do you make sure they eat? Where do you make sure they visit in Oxford?
Man, that's a great question. Well, we love Ajax at our house. Now, so I think that would be certainly one of the places that they would need to eat. But there's so many great places to eat on town.
Can hardly go wrong.
Right? You really can't go wrong. But we're not, you know, we kind of like those, I don't even know how to describe them, the Ajax, the Proud Larry's, those type of restaurants around the square. We love those type of places to eat. As for other places, I mean, I think you have to go on campus.
Yeah.
What a beautiful place.
Totally.
It makes our town special. Now, of course, all of the construction, maybe not, but if you can find your way around it. But I understand that we're growing as well. But I would certainly take them on campus. I think we have one of the most beautiful campuses in the country.
And then lastly, other than the Oxford Charger podcast, what are your favorite podcasts that you like to listen to or do you at all?
Actually, I really don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm a reader.
Okay.
Yeah. I like to read.
Nonfiction and fiction both? And or
it's all about growth for me.
Okay.
It's nonfiction stuff. I'm not a big fiction reader. I want to get something out of it that's going to either make me better or provide me the opportunity to help someone else.
My wife. She's 99% nonfiction when she reads, because she, like you say, she wants to either learn something or, you know, be challenged to be better, to do something differently. So
yeah, that's it. And Nicole, my wife, she's really just the opposite. Not that she doesn't want to grow as an educator or things, but she loves fiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. I'm not into that much.
Well, congrats again for your new role. It was one that I think a lot of people are rooting for you to be able to get in this position. And I know that you've got a heart, not just for teaching and administration, but specifically for the Oxford Chargers and the community here. So best of luck going into your new school year.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening in. If you enjoyed the show, I again encourage you to subscribe wherever it is that you listen to your great podcasts and follow us on the social medias at Charger Podcast. I've got a few other interviews ready to go, but if you have any suggestions of who you'd like to hear on the pod or just any feedback at all, shoot me a DM or email me at blake@chargerpodcast.com. Thanks and have a great rest of your week. Bye-bye.